Re-examining disaster preparedness in both the public and private sectors. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for David Brancaccio, with the Marketplace Midday Update. The shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando Sunday is prompting both the government and the private sector to re-examine whether they're prepared for emergencies. That's exactly what's happened with past terrorist events, from the Boston Marathon bombing to the attacks in Paris last November. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson is here to walk us through some of what we learned and the review process that happens across the country after an event like this. Tracy, let's start with hospitals.
Right. So hospitals these days, they have to have a plan for mass casualties. And to get a sense of how they do that, we spoke with Dr. Eric Guralnick. He's the medical director of emergency preparedness at Brigham and Women's Hospital. They treated victims from the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013. And he says their focus is on drills, on exercises, repetition. They want to have this clear plan and a way to activate the plan and to update it.
From the Boston Marathon bombing, in fact, we learned that the number one bottleneck across all level one trauma centers was information systems. The way that we register patients in our system, the way that we track patients in the system, and the way that we identify patients in a system.
He said they've also looked at the response to the 2012 shooting at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, that they've studied leadership and communication.
And of course, law enforcement around the country is obviously studying these events, too.
Right. And for that, we talked to Christopher Rodriguez. He's the director of New Jersey's Office of Homeland Security. He said after recent attacks, they've updated this free training that they offer to companies, running them through how to respond to an active shooter. It's actually pretty popular.
We saw after the terrible attacks in Paris and Brussels, and certainly after San Bernardino, an increased demand for those services.
He said it's also clear to him that after Orlando, law enforcement needs new strategies and tactics to detect homegrown violent extremism.
Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson, thank you. The market for German government debt, or bonds, has passed a new milestone. The return on German 10-year debt fell below zero for the first time ever this morning. Here's the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker.
The move in German government bonds, which are IOUs of the German state traded in the markets, takes the financial world further into the strange territory where some assets yield a return of less than zero. 10-year government bonds generally produce better returns, so it's particularly striking when they go negative, especially for such an important economy as Germany. It has already happened for the equivalent Swiss and Japanese government debts. The negative returns reflect the weak recovery after the financial crisis and central bank policies of ultra-low interest rates.
Here in the U.S., the yield on the 10-year T-note is 1.58%. If I asked you who do companies work for, your answer would be part of a big debate in the corporate world. Is it the employees, consumers? To many people, the assumption has long been that companies work for shareholders. All this week, Marketplace is examining that assumption in a series we call The Price of Profits. And this morning, we step back, way back, for a long view. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Scott Tong.
If you manage a company, shareholder activist Nell Minow says you work for your stockholders, period.
The people who've entrusted their money to you. That's the entire basis of capitalism. Capitalism isn't named after the corporate managers, it's named after the providers of capital.
But have corporations always directed profits to shareholders? Well, it turns out the earliest companies didn't make profits. They did other things. Duke University historian Philip Stern.
In the medieval and early modern periods, churches were corporations, towns were corporations. So corporations originally served public purposes, not necessarily private ones.
Back then, corporations needed approval by governments to serve broader public interests. So what did public mean?
The colony of Virginia was governed by a company, not by the crown. The British and Dutch ventures in the East Indies were governed by a company. So these were institutions that coined money, that made laws, that had courts.
The East India Company was created to trade spices till it encountered mission creep. Conquering India, shipping slaves and opium, struggling in the American tea market. By the 19th century, corporations no longer needed state okay. You could simply file a few papers and voila, incorporation, says political scientist David Seipley at the University of Denver.
At this point, the sense of there being some specific public benefit provided was lost, and you know, private interests were considered adequate reason to incorporate a corporation.
But the U.S. pendulum shifted too in the 20th century. After the Great Depression, firms like GE and IBM sent revenues first to their customers, their suppliers, and their workers, and shareholders last. But since the 80s, shareholders leapfrogged back to the top. So, the point of all this whipsawing is there's continuous debate, says Philip Stern.
The debates keep coming back to this one central question: for whom does the company or the corporation work?
What comes next? Check back in with us in, I don't know, a century. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Back now to the shooting in Orlando. The airline JetBlue announced that it's offering free flights to Orlando for relatives of the victims of Sunday's shooting. The airline, which is based in New York, has a large presence in Orlando. And the retailer Target said it will have a moment of silence in its stores across the country today to honor two employees who were killed in the nightclub shooting. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.